You're listening to another Woodshop Podcast, the okayest podcast of its type. Your hosts are Daniel Dunlap of Daniel Dunlap Woodworks and Peter Kapar of Bee Trees Workshop. You can find them as well as the podcast on your favorite social media platforms.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to episode 198 of Another Woodshop Podcast, where this week we are joined by a talented woodworker, an all-around maker, and not to mention one of my favorite creators to follow. He might be quite reserved and stoic, but don't let that fool you. He's one of the funniest and nicest dudes you will ever meet. He's also the most successful maker when it comes to getting your whole family involved in his content, which we all desperately fail at. But if you're feeling chills, it's because our guest is electrifying. And if you're wondering if he can do it, I assure you that Frank does it. Frank Beatty's here. Woo!
Hey, thanks, guys.
What's up, bud?
Thanks for having me on, man.
Frank can
and he is
do
electrifying,
it.
And I'm losing control.
I'll do it.
It's grease, I think, or Footloose, one of those.
What's that?
It's when a man loves a car. That's the best way I can describe the movie. But speaking of men loving cars, Dan.
I assume you're talking about our patrons.
Yes, you couldn't pick that up from my subtle.
I don't know why, but we got two new patrons this week, I believe. I may have said this name last week, but my
memory's
so bad.
Well, that's the beauty of signing up as a patron. You can get a double read. Like, what other podcast will do that?
Well, probably any podcast that has somebody as old as me reading the patrons, probably.
Bad Memory podcast that's still in episode one after a year? See what I did there?
What's the 51st dates of podcasts? Our two new patrons are Henry Lutens and Joel Balestra?
Wow, I love those guys already.
Balestra? Hey. We're just happy you guys are along for the ride. If that sounds like something you want to help us out in, we encourage you to go over to patreon.com/anotherwoodshoppodcast. Because then, if you do that, you get a chance for me to say your name and forget it and say it.
Along with other great benefits that are listed on Patreon.
Along with other great benefits.
Check it out. It's the best way to support the show.
We also like to give a shout out to our VIP patrons who go above and beyond every week, and bless your souls. You really
bless
help us
your
out
heart.
And the VIP patrons are as follows: Henry Lutens. He's one of our new ones. Wait a minute, I forgot to click the button. Son of a bee! I should have been more ready, but I was even less readier. This is
good thing this
time
isn't a second take of this podcast.
Henry Lutens, Scotty Holland with Elevated Wood Design, Charlie Coons at Stubbit Gay Studio, Justin Frazier from Frazier Canyon Woodworks, Jesse McIntyre from Sage Hill Woodcraft, Michael at Gillette Woodworks, Pete's Little Bug. Is that?
I'll show you when you're
Nick
older.
Brim. No, that's not Nick Brim. Patrick Gitzel. Wait a minute.
Did they mix up their names to mess with us?
Yeah. Patrick Gitzel from Nick Brim Woodworking. Max Reed and Not Alyssa at Reed Design Co. Matt Maynard at Patriotic Pines of North Carolina. Bill Burkle from WTB Woodworking. Malcolm at Boston of Woodworks. Justin Addy at Calvary Customs. Knit Brim at Patrick Gitzel. Wait a minute. Scott Shirk at Red Lake Custom Woodworks. Max and Mindy Coons at WK Studio. And Justin Bailey at Campfire Woodworks. Okay, so the question remains then, who is Pete's
Don't worry about it. I'll show you when you're older. But isn't that a great benefit that our top tier patrons have, where they could change their handle every week and we have to read it? Wow. I hope nobody uses that information for evil.
Oh, yeah. There's a couple of trolls in there for sure. And I guess I have to like them.
Nip brim.
nip bring.
So anyways, like I said before, those are our VIP patrons. They go above and beyond. If you want to help us out in any way, you can go over to patreon.com/anotherwoodshoppodcast and help us out over there. We got a couple tiers you can sign up for. VIPs being one of them, but we have other ones. So
yeah,
go give it a look. Would
Fun
you
Fun fact, the P in VIP please? Stands for Peter. So
does
yeah,
it
so
though?
Anyways, our guest
the
is...
The V stands for Vanuel.
Vanuel. So our guest today is Frank, best known as Frank Does It, because he does do it. And like I said in the intro, despite being you're kind of a stoic dude, but you're once I used to be intimidated by you, and then I got to talk to you like this dude is hilarious and he's funny and he's nice and always enjoy the content. I love all the content you do with your kids. But for those of our listeners that have never heard of you because they're insane or they're never on the internet, give us the elevator pitch. Who the hell do you think you are?
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. So first of all, the I in VIP was it was done by Frank, but so basically, I'm an Army veteran. I'm a father of four. I've been married to my beautiful wife 18 years, and I'm a journeyman lineman by trade, and I do content creation and woodworking DIY on the side, and I have a lot of fun doing it and have a lot of fun getting my family involved. And I try to make some comedy videos too. So I just kind of try to dabble in a lot of different things.
I don't know like what's more dangerous, like the high, like high voltage electricity that you work with, the Army service you had, or the fact that you have four kids. Like,
I think it's the four
you've
kids.
Put in your time, man, on all of those.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, I've had an eventful life, that's for sure.
Yeah, right on. We were kind of getting into it a little bit in the pre-show, and you were laying down some really cool info about like how where it's led you. But let's talk about like how it all started. So, I mean, obviously you were in the Army, then you went started training for a linesman. You're now a journeyman, which is I learned the top tier. You're the guy, right? Yep. But how did it all start? Like, how did woodworking come into that? Like, how did the shop start? Like, what was the beginning? What was the catalyst that got you going?
So I think kind of the line trade, and I don't know, I think maybe it's just my can-do attitude that I've had my whole life that kind of started it. But the thing that started it firsthand was, you know, my wife and I were married for quite some time, and we were sleeping on a mattress on top of a metal bed frame, and she always wanted a nice bed. And I was like, I got to looking at prices of beds and things like that, and I'm like, that's crazy expensive. I'm a lineman, I can figure out how to do it, right? And so then I just kind of started watching YouTube videos and things like that, and kind of basically taught myself how to woodwork. And then I kind of got addicted to woodworking. I did woodworking in high school, like in wood shop. And I enjoyed it back then, but I never really did it until I just kind of got like focused on like fixing things myself, doing things myself. And the bunk beds was the catalyst that kind of launched me into woodworking. And I just fell in love with it.
So you and your wife slept in bunk beds?
No,
it was for the kids, right? It was for the kids, guys. It was for the kids. You know, it's so funny. You made me laugh a little bit when you were like, we were sleeping on this metal frame, and I remember like growing up, like sleeping on metal bed frames, and if had a headboard and bottom, what's the bottom part called?
The footboard.
Footboard, sure. If it had that, like that was fancy. And then I learned that like we just weren't wealthy. We just left them like metal frames, just like with like the baseline, but then if you like care, you can get something nicer,
right?
That's awesome.
Well, that beat what we slept on as kids. We just had sleeping bags on the floor. Like,
I
that was a joke. Well, yeah, you guys, no, you're not supposed fine. To be like, oh,
poor
God,
Daniel.
Oh,
back in Mother Poland, I slept on a couch that folded out to be a flat bed. So, you know, like, yeah.
No, it's funny that you have that story, though, because I was just thinking to myself, oh, that's so expensive. Well, I'll just buy a whole garage shop worth of tools to do it. That'll be cheaper. That'll show
it was like
them.
The Spagnola when he did the $30,000 spoon video. It was just like he like went to the store and his wife was like, oh, this is a nice spoon. He's like, I can make that. And then he just broke down what every part, every tool cost that he used to make the spoon. And it was like 30K because it's all the tools in a shop. It's like that. But we showed them, guys. We built a bed frame.
We did.
So did you start with like basic tools or did you kind of jump into it? Because some of us kind of jump into it and just like, you know what? What's 15 grand? I got a pension. Yeah, let me buy a saw stop out of the gate. How did your thing start?
I started pretty budget, because I wasn't planning on like doing this, right? So, I think I used a Harbor Freight miter saw, which was a piece of crap, and then I used a Craftsman. The new Craftsman, not the nice Craftsman from back when our grandparents were around, table saw and
Craftsboy. Yeah,
my first table saw was a Craftsman,
and I bet it was probably a nice one, or was it from our era?
No, it was a finger eating Champion. Like, I was scared to death of that thing.
Yeah, so yeah, no, it was, I think I was probably less than $1,500 into tools when I made that first bed.
You know, that would make a good video.
Yeah.
Starting your shop for $1,500.
Yeah. I wish I was recording back then, but I wasn't.
Well, you are now.
So, well, that leads me to my question. How did you go from that to like content creation and, you know, what you're doing these days?
Yeah. So like I learned how to do that from YouTube. I learned how to fix my cars from YouTube. So basically, like, my first YouTube video was me changing out the shocks on a 89 Toyota pickup because I wanted to change the shocks out on my old Toyota pickup that I had, and there was no videos showing me how to do it. So I'm like, oh, that's what YouTube's for, is to like help people do stuff. So let me film me actually like screwing around with this thing and I'll figure out how to do it myself and I'll make a video about it. Well, then it got like 28,000 views. And so I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Like, am I getting views on this?
That's shocking.
Right?
Shocks.
Oh, it's a shock, like Bilstein shocking.
Don't leave me in suspense. Suspension.
Have you met Pete before? And all the
Carpons.
This is what I live with every week.
I'm training for being a dad. Just cut me some slack.
That's good. The puns and the dad jokes are always good.
Well, that's cool. I actually didn't realize that your like first video was a car video.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't either. I just pulled up his channel because I wanted to go back and verify.
And it was like, shot in vertical.
Telling the truth?
Ooh.
Oh, how dare you? Even like back then, that was probably.
And now it's like, okay. Like, I feel like now it's
yeah,
fine.
That's 8 years old. Yeah. That's an 8 year old video.
Look at you. You've been on YouTube
and
longer
than
us.
Shot it in vertical.
Yeah.
Can't believe you were, you weren't shunned from.
Look how ahead of his time he was, because like, think about it. 8 years ago, we were shooting horizontal still. Like, stories weren't a thing.
Like, the internet would
yeah.
Come down.
Oh, you were so new age. Look at you, man.
I was a rebel.
Trailblazer over here.
He was making reels before they were a thing. He was making IGTV posts before it was a thing.
It, might I say, though, that's a nice looking Toyota pickup.
Thank you.
It's like a Marty McFly.
Ooh, those are classic
Toyota pickup. It's slightly newer version, and that looks like a late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah.
I'm not
gonna say Toyota did one thing right, and that was that pickup truck. Yeah, like that generation or that body style of pickups. And you know they're good because they're in like third world countries with 300,000 miles on them or kilometers, and they're still running.
For sure.
Right on. Well, it's like, all right, so you're developing your shop, you get into it, you start doing the content. You're in a bigger space now. You're in a much bigger shop. How did that come about?
Yeah, so this shop that I'm in is actually the same shop that I filmed that Toyota pickup video. It's the only shop that I've had, but I started it out the shop not planning on doing woodworking, right? So So like I have a big vehicle lift in my shop, and I had that put in here well before like I even wanted to do woodworking. So then between, you know, doing the bed for my wife and building the woodshed, like that's kind of, then I kind of turn it into wood shop. Now that vehicle lift kind of just gets in my way, but.
So it's changed so much over the years. It actually looks like a completely different shop.
It does.
Where you could see like the confusion. It's like, oh wow. That's
yeah. I thought it was a different shop. I thought you were maybe like in a garage before and I moved it into that shop.
No, same shop, but like, you know, when I first bought this place, it was just like dirt floors and no actual walls. So I had the walls framed in and insulated and all that stuff. But yeah, it's completely different than when I first started working in it.
Wow. That's cool. So are any plans of just getting rid of the lift and fully leaning into the woodworking, or you're still planning to maybe be using that for some car stuff here or there?
You know, I only use the lift twice a year, and that's to take snow tires off and put them on. So
oh, you're one of those.
I really do want to get rid of it now, because now anytime that there's like a major thing I need to do with my vehicles, I don't have the time to do it. And so I just take it to the shop. Because like I'm woodworking or building power lines. I don't have time to be messing around with oil changes and stuff. So,
right. It's a great idea to have something like that in your shop, but like it takes up a lot of real estate.
It does.
That you could use for potentially.
Doesn't
something
Jake else. Miller have one of those in his shop? I think he still does.
He did. I don't know if he still does.
Because I remember we were joking around at one point that if he gets a large format CNC. If he needs more space, he could just like lift the thing up and just work underneath it and then put it back down.
I mean, I've actually done that quite a few times with my lift.
Like lifted up some tools?
Yeah, like so that big assembly table that I have, like the casters that I had, or no, so when I bought my saw stop, when I got rid of that Craftsman table saw, I needed to... my saw stop was actually shorter than my Craftsman table saw. I was using the assembly table as my outfeed table. And so I actually lifted that whole assembly table up with the lift. And then I cut like 2 inches off the legs.
Must
put
be
the
nice.
Casters back on and then dropped it back down.
That sounds like a brilliant idea.
If I,
maybe you should.
If I ever like build a shop, or when I build a shop, I always wanted like to put a beam down the center so I could like get one of those like chain hoists. At least for like, because you never know. You know, even back in the truck, put a tool onto it, or if I get it.
You never know when you're going to pull an engine.
You never know when you got to pull an engine. Yeah, just to change the spark plugs or something.
Or a hammy.
I don't know how spark plugs work.
When I bought my Laguna tape or my Laguna bandsaw, I used it to get it out of my pickup too. Like I put straps underneath of it and put it on the lift, lifted it up like 2 inches above the bed of my truck, drove my truck out and then lowered it.
Yeah, that would be nice. That would be nice.
Yeah. I remember standing up there.
I had a heck of a time getting my saw stop table out of my truck when I first bought my saw stop. Like, God, when was that? 2018.
Because they load it for you in a lot of places. They'll put it on the back of your truck, but then like,
yeah, but they're not there to help you unload it.
Yeah, you got to get it down.
You're on your own now, bub. Yep.
But I remember my Laguna bandsaw just tipping it up because they ship flat. So like to even lift it up, like you just don't want to, because it's heavy. It's a heavy sucker. It's all cast iron.
Yeah.
But at least for the main body, just to stand it up, that's sketchy. So it'd be nice to have some extra support. And that was old shop where like I barely cleared the ceiling so low I could touch it. you mentioned kind of building power lines. So you're a lineman by trade, not an electrician, a lineman, which is like...
Yep.
Wait a minute. I thought you were a football player. That's not...
No, he's not like a sports ball lineman.
I thought he was a football player.
Nope.
What the?
No.
Whatever. Let's keep going.
So yeah, you're aligned. So you started that right after the Army, or was that something you did in the Army that you kind of transitioned into civilian life? How did that come to be?
Yeah, no. So I started it right when I got out of the Army. I went to a line school, which is kind of like just an intro to the trade, and then teach you how to climb and teach you a little bit about electrical theory and stuff like that. But then you take that information and then try to get an apprenticeship, because that's really, the school doesn't do anything for you other than knowledge and something to put on your resume to try to get an apprenticeship. And then, so then you get an apprenticeship and then you spend 3 to 4 years in the apprenticeship. And then once you finish that, then you're a journeyman.
Right on.
Yeah.
So you finally one day said, screw this, I'm done doing this full time. You kind of went full time with your content, or part time with the content, and part time you're now basically like doing Uber Eats, but for line work.
Yeah. Yep. So I was doing the
Uber Lights,
Uber lineman,
the 9 to 5 for quite some time. And then, you know, I wanted to try to really work on Frank Does It and see if I could pay the bills with it. And it you know, in the interim, it gives me more time to work on it. But in the interim, I can take short calls, like go work on this, on storms, or work 2 month jobs and not be tied to a specific company. So I'm kind of like a freelance lineman right now. And like I just got back from New Hampshire working that snowstorm that hit last week, and
it's crazy. There's still snowstorms up there right now. That's bonkers. And you were telling us right before, because I asked you, like, have you ever done like that? We were in a helicopter and they like drop you on a line, and you're like, yeah, right before workbench gone.
Yep. So
that sounds fun and scary at the
same
time.
It's so badass. So,
It was awesome. Like, so we didn't do like where you're like standing on the helicopter and like barehanding the wire. But we did to where, like, you know, they drop the man line and you hook it into your harness, and then they pick you up and they fly you miles into the woods that way, because it's too steep to hike. I mean, you could hike it, but you're going to spend half the day getting there. And so then they dropped me and my crew off, and I was a foreman, so I'd have the radio, and as soon as we landed, I'd call for our fly basket, which would have all of our tools and things like that in it, our lunches and rigging and stuff like that. They bring it to the job location, drop it off, and then what we were doing was reconductoring that, like a bunch of lines for fire mitigation for California. And so we were replacing all the poles and putting in different wire. And so everything that came in there was via helicopter. So like we would have a hole dug already, or we would hand dig a hole, and then we'd call for a pole and they'd fly the pole in. They'd be dangling it underneath and the helicopter.
Oh, so you were actually placing brand new lines.
Yeah. With the helicopter, and just, you know, me telling them like, hey, coming down, or, you know, whatever. And so they'd bring the pole in and we put it in the hole, and then we guy it off with ropes and then call for gravel and have them and then they'd come in with it.
Oh, so like each step of the process, yeah, you'd have to call.
They'd come in with a bag of gravel and lower it down, and then we'd cut it with our knives and let the gravel go into the hole.
Jeez, so many steps,
man.
He's like a cool version of Lee Ullman.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get punched for that one. It's just a different kind of electrical Pokemon over here.
I want to talk to you a little bit about your workbench. I know we got a question coming up about it, but I want some a little bit of info. Like, what was the driving force behind that? Because I know that was one of the things that you did that like really took off. You got a lot of attention for that workbench, the MicroJig workbench that you made.
Yeah. So, you know, I call it a miter saw station, but it's 21 foot long. So it's more like a big long workbench that my miter saw sits on. And, right. I don't know. Like, so I ended up getting a bunch of free chests of drawers from my old employer, and it was enough for like 21 feet worth of real estate in my shop. And I'm like, well, I can't turn that down because it's free. And I was planning on making my own miter saw station and designing the cabinets and everything, but like, how do I turn this down? And so I ended up getting them. And so now all of a sudden it's like, get them out of here now, or we're going to put them in the dumpster. So I've got them sitting in my shop. Right. So then I got them sitting in my shop. I can't do any woodworking projects because they're freaking taking up so much real estate in my shop. And so I basically like, okay, well, I need a top for it too. So I was like, well, I can design that. At least I can kind of make it my own with the top. And so then I just kind of, you know, I really like the Ron Paul torsion box style. And I also love, right, you know, the micro jig, yeah, match fit system. And so I just kind of got on SketchUp and kind of combined the two.
Did you, had you reached out to match fit or micro jig with that idea, or did you just do it without them and then just kind of, because I know they've shared a lot of your content over the years since you've built that.
Yeah, so no,
curious how that
I did out. I did it completely without them. I had done a little bit of micro jig match fit stuff prior to that project, and but it wasn't until like I started actually doing that project that micro jig actually reached out to me and wanted me to become an affiliate of theirs. And so that's actually one of my bigger sponsorships is with MicroJig.
Nice.
And a lot of it, you know, kind of derived from that project.
Do you do a lot of affiliate stuff with different brands?
I don't do too much affiliate stuff. It's mostly, I mean, I have an affiliate link with a lot of brands like RZ Mask and you know, MicroJig, and I'm actually a Lowe's affiliate now and Amazon. Ooh, and nice. All that stuff. But I don't know. I've MicroJig, actually I've made a decent amount from them because their commissions are so high, and I feel like they just kind of, it's easy to sell their stuff, right? Because we all kind of use it, and I'll never really sell anything that I don't really use anyways.
That's a great way to think about it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm simply curious because we often talk about, you know, how to build relationship with brands. And, you know, we talk about how, you know, it's good to actually use their products before you try to start reaching out. And I think, you know, you're a shining example of that. So
yeah,
I like the story. Yeah,
appreciate it.
And I'm glad you're here to share.
Do you have any advice for anyone that's looking to work with brands? Like, what's your approach when you reach out to these brands, or if they reach out to you, like how does that conversation usually go? Because people are always asking us, and I'd love to get your input.
Yeah, so I'm probably not the best person to ask because most of the stuff
you're doing good, though. You're doing good.
Most of the stuff that I've gotten, brands have reached out to me. One brand I did reach out to and had some success with was Wagner, and you guys will see some stuff coming from them before too long. I'm currently trying to paint the whole interior of my shop. So I reached out to them basically like wanting to get a sprayer, not, you know, so I haven't personally reached out to a lot of brands. I don't know why. I just kind of, they've kind of just reached out to me. So I'm probably not the best one to ask on that, but.
So that's the way to do it. Just be unresistible. Like
you're Frank, irresistible.
Have them come to you.
Yeah. Just
unresistible. Unresistible. Is it the opposite of
whatever? Be undeniable. How's
undeniable.
That?
Well, that's awesome. The one other thing I wanted to mention is, or talk about, because we talked about this in a pre-show. So going back to the line work stuff, you did the line work, you made the decision to kind of move towards that. One of the biggest benefits of it, and it was the Uber Eats joke of like, you basically do on call or like as needed type work, or you sign up for stuff where they can reach out to you. So you actually work, you were telling us, like you did a 4-month job in California and then you were basically off for 6 months working on Frank Does It, being with the family and like just stockpiled cash. And then you were able to just kind of coast. And how do you feel about that kind of lifestyle or that kind of like work schedule where like you're away from family for so long, but then you're working for a long time? Because we're all trying to escape that 9-to-5, and hearing success stories of different scheduled work that works is really good to hear. So I want to hear your input.
Yeah. So that time that I spent in California, that was hard. I don't really like being away from the family, especially not for 4 months, but, but like this storm that I just did in New Hampshire, I was gone for a week. You know, and basically made enough money to survive for a month. So,
wow, that's cool.
You know, in my trade, there's opportunity to make a lot of money quick. And so, you know, that's why I went to California and did that. I'm a huge family man. Family is most important thing to me. And so that was really hard. But I had to escape the job I was currently working at, and that was kind of my best option, was to go pile up a bunch of money and, you know, take 6 months off and try to really work on trying to build this. And so now I'm kind of probably going to do more of the short-term work and stuff. Like, I don't really want to leave the family for
that
long time again, you know.
But that'd be good. That's a nice way to supplement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're able to kind of pick and choose which jobs you take, right? Yeah,
exactly.
That's
yeah. So I'm on a list of like 30 companies for these storms. And so like when hurricanes hit, I'll get a text message that says, can you work? And I'll just either say yes or ignore it if I can't. And then you can, you know, sign the books at the union halls and stuff like that and get local work too. So there's local work, you know, that might last a month or 3 months, but then you're home every night or, you know,
yep.
So there's always work for a lineman. So I'm kind of excited just kind of do the freelance thing and just work when I want to work or work when I need to work. And then that way I can pour a little bit more into my family and pour a little bit more into my business.
That is very
I love cool. that. Now, very do you nice. Do any commissions or any kind of one-off work or trade shows, or not trade shows, but like fairs where you're making smaller items? Are you doing anything like that?
So no, I haven't really done that. And I honestly don't know where I'd find the time to do, you know, production work. I'm willing to take on projects that will be a cool video, that'll be a cool content, you know. Everything that I have made has been kind of for friends or, you know, people asking me to make something. And if it's something that I want to make, or if it's, you know,
if it intrigues you,
if cool it enough. Intrigues me and like, then I'll do it. And probably won't end up making money on the piece itself, but that gives me, you know, content, you know, of a cool yeah. build or whatever. But
yeah, dude, I love that concept. I like hearing this because this is a completely kind of unique approach to like having a job while still doing your own thing. Because most of the people, like most people are like me. Most people are, they work the 9-to-5, but then, you know, they're weekend warriors. They're in the shop the 5-to-9 after work. If they have a family, it's a little less than weekends. And that's kind of when they work. So hearing different ways of being able to make it work, because in this day and age, it's hard to comprehend where you can live comfortably without going to a 9-to-5. So yeah. Hearing success stories, I think, is very important to our audience. And to me too, even because I'm just looking at long-term stuff. Like I like my job, but I don't want to be working for them, for their dream, you know, for forever. I want to start working towards my thing, and having Emma on has been really great, but it's really cool to hear somebody do something like this. You know, like right now I'm kind of in a, not obviously not the same situation, but it's like, I have these like these ice climbing tool gigs or like some other production jobs that will sometimes fall on my lap, and it's like $2,000-$4,000 or whatever, and it'll cover me for a couple months of workshop time. Granted, if that was my full-time job, would not be enough. But for like, you know, when you need some shop supply money or whatever, like that's pretty good, or have to have it pay for material or some other fun projects. But we're actually getting to the point where we're reevaluating whether or not we want to do vendor events, smaller events, things that are making us 20% of the money, but eating up 80% of our time.
Yeah.
It's like not really worth it anymore. Mm-hmm. And we're like, what's really going to make us money long term? And it's like, hey, like, what about full, like content, like full blown content, long, you know, versions like YouTube or whatever, because even on Instagram, it's kind of limited unless you're really a monster account.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, like brand deals and stuff, they're, I mean, at least from my experience, they don't come along as often as mm-hmm. you really need them to actually like make like pay the bills with them. The word I was looking for was consistent. They're not as consistent, you know, and that's really how you make money on Instagram, is with brands. There's really not a lot of other ways.
Yeah.
Brands, I mean, and affiliate marketing.
Affiliate a little bit. Yes. I mean, some people kill it with affiliate, but like most affiliate sales stuff, like you're just getting maybe couple hundred bucks a month.
Some sort of consistent paycheck is key, though, especially like when you're doing it full time. Trust me.
Yeah.
You don't want to be riding the roller coaster and hitting those valleys, because those are tough weeks.
Yeah, for sure.
Those are really tough weeks.
And like, listen, there's something to be said about inconsistent incomes. Like, I mean, look at farmers. Farmers will work all year and then they'll do their one big push where they sell everything and they make their year in a month. And then they just have to allocate that. That's when you got to be good with money, right? Same thing, like Frank's good with money. Clearly, he's still
stockpile. And
he's got four kids and nice tools. Like, he's good with money. He can earn 6 months worth in 2 months, and then like save that and be good with the money and budget.
Or he's selling his body on the side.
I mean, look at him. He's a piece of work in a nice way.
he's got a fan site on Only
Only polls.
Only polls.
Only polls. That's right. That was
my people. Well, that's great. We'll kind of get into more questions for you in the question segment. But I guess, Dan, should we? Oh, I guess, Dan, I don't have a sound for this, but before we get into the maker news, Dan, who are you wearing today?
Oh, I'm wearing my one-off. Another Woodshop Podcast t-shirt that Pete didn't know I made.
I actually love that shirt. I forgot that you made that design.
Yeah,
I mean, it just says Another Woodshop Podcast.
It's just a Canva. Meh. It's just a Canva design. And I, I made it to say Another Woodshop Podcast. I'm actually shocked that it's spelled.
Yeah, we need to get that up on the site or on Etsy. That would look really
good. Well, until we do, I think this will be one of the designs we give away for episode 2.
Yeah, the Another Woodshop Podcast. Yeah. Meh.
Sure. It's very limited.
There's literally just one.
So
there's just one.
Yes. Very limited edition. There might be 5 or 6 in the future, but as of right now, there's only one.
I'm rocking some Frank Does It merch. And I've been really into like tan colors lately. I'm literally wearing my sand shirt.
Whatever. Oh, look at you. You sell out.
My own merch. This startup shirt. Maker, Petrie's Workshop, but... these hats, Frank, I'm pretty sure they're available. You have a merch shop, right?
Yep, frankdoesit.com.
Yeah, so go check that out, too. You can get some stuff from him. And I'm wearing Nick Brim underwear, which means I'm not wearing any underwear.
My favorite. Are they actually Nick's? Did you take them from him at work?
The joke is I'm not wearing any underwear.
Part of it's Nick Brim. Oh, I thought maybe he had a merch store.
He might. I don't know. Although at this point, you know, his wife's account is going to be blowing up, so she'll have the merch and he'll be the shop help.
Frank, are you wearing any maker branded not content, but
he's got the ghost merch or ghost tee.
Like I got,
oh yeah, he's wearing his own too.
Frank got does a shirts hoodie and then Total Boat hat.
Oh, the Total Boat hat. I got one of those hats around here somewhere. I haven't broken it out yet.
I got Dan's hat too.
I don't have the black and gray, but I got the blue one.
I got that one's up. Oh, wait, I don't have the hat hanger in here anymore. since Emma moved in.
I like to wear my hats until they're all nasty, and then I'll switch to a different one.
Yep.
Right now, my current favorite is this Shopsmith hat I got from the people.
What's funny is, like, I genuinely, like, treasure this Corkbill hat. Like, I, like, there's almost...
That's a rare
almost
hat
no
as well.
Sweatbands on it or whatever. But no matter how much I try, there's something about the Corkbill. It just catches, like, see this side right here? It's from my thumb. Like, from putting it on and off. Like, it just, it attracts dirt in some way, but... I still
really. I think I only had two of those made. I gave one to you and one to Coffee.
Yeah, I do, because it's so unique. I've gotten some compliments on this, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And then I got my.
I think I got that from Ruckus.
Maybe I got my Nick Brim Fresh Prince of Bel Air hat with the.
That's sick.
Yeah, those are cool. We got some good hats at Workbench Con.
For sure.
I did a hat culling the other day, like. Just there's some old hats that got retired.
Oh yeah,
it was mostly hats that that sometimes I've won them in giveaways from brands that I've never really use or interact with. I'm not gonna name any brands in case they're sponsors.
I go back and forth on wearing a branded hat because I'm like, wait, these people aren't paying me, but then I get one like this and I'm like, well, it actually fits.
It's also it's Shopsmith. It's kind of it's both. Iconic and ironic. It's like
it's retro,
but it's so old school. It's like if I had a Porter Cable hat, I would wear the hell out of it, just because it's old school. I actually did a story the other day. I'm like, is Porter Cable still around? Because they disappeared for a while. They got bought out by someone, and then they stopped having them in stores, and then they came back. But I think their routers are dead now.
Yeah, the router that everybody liked is no longer.
I have one on my table.
A Porter Cable.
Ooh, I have a true blue Ryobi belt sander.
I think I have a Porter Cable jigsaw.
I have a drill press. And listen, there's one tool that more woodworkers have of Porter Cable than anything else. And it's not the router. It's that super loud ass pancake compressor that comes with a three. Yeah,
that's what
everyone
I have.
That had
thing
that.
Is loud.
Everyone at some point had that thing. It's so it's really the loudest compressor ever. Like it's so bad.
That's accurate. Yeah. That's
but the
so
guns
accurate.
Are great. I have
actually,
them.
I have a fun story about that. I ordered that pancake air compressor from Amazon.
Which fun fact?
And
not a pancake.
They accidentally
very
sent
oval.
Me, it's not. It's it, well, it's pancake.
It's like imagine a Snorlax sitting down. That's a Pokemon joke.
But Amazon accidentally sent me two. And I reached out to them and they're like, yeah, whatever, just keep the other one. So I sold it on the Facebook Marketplace and basically got one for free.
Oh, you could have run dual compressors.
Yeah, but I don't need that kind of noise, man. You think I can't hear
in
now?
Stereo.
Oh, Lord. All right. What segment are we
coming
on?
Oh, Dan, your favorite segment, Dan.
Good news, everyone.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, make your news. I thought we were going to what's on my bench.
No, we'll get to it if we have time. But right now, let's just get into some maker news. Daniel, you want to kick it off? Yeah?
Yeah. Sorry about that. I just muted my mic because I was
Dan ate broccoli today, and green is bad for Dan.
Oh, it's so bad for me. Well... something came up in my IG feed, and I feel like this is deserving of Maker News this week. Apparently, Handy Dandy Brandy, if you're not following her, you should be, she's given away, in conjunction with, a Onefinity CNC.
Nice.
So, I didn't read up on her rules or exactly what everything's going to entail, but if you go over to Handy Dandy Brandy's IG account... you can probably figure that out and get signed up over there. As you know, Pete and I don't know about Frank. Frank, do you even have a CNC? I think we talked about
not.
This at Workbench. I don't think you do. Yeah.
I do not yet.
Not yet.
Well, we're big fans of Onefinity, so go give that a look.
Handy Dandy Brandy?
Get signed up. Handy Dandy Brandy?
Brandy?
No, it's Rebecca.
Oh. I was going to say, because you can't trust anyone that uses their first name and their handle. It just...
I just like that IG handle. Andy, Dana, Brandy. Pete, did you have anything you want to bring up? I have a few
did
more
I?
Things, but, you know, we
did
can go
I?
Back and forth.
So, apparently Surf Prep is doing a West Coast meetup on June 8th. And, you know, usually be like, all right, Sanding Company's doing a meetup, whatever. Guys, free tacos. So
is that so legit? We're, I thought maybe that was just a rumor.
If that's not a rumor, I'm gonna have to cancel my ticket. But no, June 8th, West Coast meetup. It came across our RSS feed,
our
RSS feeds or news tickers. Yeah, somebody Snapchatted it to me, and we were like, you know what, maybe we do a meetup in the West Coast, because I always complain about how there's not enough meetups and there's nothing in like the summertime. And you know, early June is right around the time where I can still get away from my pregnant wife, not get away from her, but like I can leave and she won't be mad.
Yeah. When is she due?
July. Something? I know. Yes. You're going to give me a day and you're
gonna July. When exactly do you have a 30th? A date? July 30th.
Anyone born in July has okay, been like, oh, you should saying. Do this day. Like, it's not like we get to choose, but I know it's their birthday.
I was just curious, like around. What
the 32nd of July.
Okay.
32nd of July.
My favorite July yep. day.
Yep. And my she'll be born exactly day. At 7:60 a.m. Mm-hmm. Yep. Interesting. Exactly. But anyway, so like.
You have this all boiled down. Yeah, you know exactly what's
nothing like having a plan for it to get ruined. But yeah, so they're doing.
And everything will go.
They're doing smooth. A West Coast meetup, which might be fun because honestly, there's not that many like. Meetups. I mean, there are some little ones, but
that it's been a minute since we've been to the West Coast. Yeah. You know, it's been a while. We went out there for a reason.
I got a little taste of the West Coast this week. We had an earthquake, so that was crazy. But like, you know, aside from that,
hey, this ain't what's.
Oh,
on
I'm
my,
sorry, but like, just saying, I miss
what's underneath my.
Made me think of West Coast. I was like, oh, let's move out. Let's go out there for a bit. But Dan, what do you have something else too?
I got one other thing. It's not really, I don't know if it's maker news worthy, but it's worth bringing up because it was so weird. Do you follow Evan and Caitlin?
Oh, dude, that's on my list. Get yeah. out of my head, dude.
I've been a follower of Evan and Caitlin for a while, and I've gotten to the point where I don't watch a whole lot of their videos because, you know, I don't always like.
I love those guys. They're great.
My dog is like. Fighting with the cat. Why do you do this now? Why? Anyway, I don't often watch their videos, but this one caught my eye and I was like, okay, I gotta watch this. They got one of those, I think it's a Boston Dynamics.
I don't know if robot. It's a Boston Dynamics one, but it's basically one of the same, because Boston Dynamics released released the design, or at least the prototype design. So yeah. There's other companies that have made them. And
yeah, it's like a robot.
And Evan
dog,
bought, right? quote unquote, the cheapest one. And by the cheap, that thing was not cheap.
And then they turned it into the creepiest Furby I've ever seen in my life.
Basically,
like this
a
thing
Furby
was...
dog. And it was both the most awesome and the most like nightmare fuel thing ever.
Nightmare fuel, yes.
And then
very nightmare fuel-y.
In classic ENK fashion, they went to like a public park and they were playing fetch with it and stuff and like recording some B-roll, which also like I would have loved to be a fly on a wall at that park just watching them, just like, what are they doing?
Oh, but, right.
Like, with no context. Like, anyway, what are they doing over there?
If you get a chance, yeah, go check out that video. It's actually really good. It's really good.
So we have some other stuff. So two bits of news and Makers for St. Jude. So they are doing a spring challenge right now. There's over $3,000 in prizes, including some stuff from Dan and myself, NBD.
Yes, sir.
Most of that number is not us, but we helped a little bit. Also,
I helped
Temecula Yard Games just raised over $1,200 for Makers for St. Jude with one of their custom cornhole boards.
Yeah, they raffled off a set of.
So very cool. Boards, yeah. You know, we shouted them out a couple times on here, but that's just I love that they're giving us stuff away and they're raising money for Makers for St. Jude.
It's a super good cause.
Listen,
super good cause.
Of all the causes, it's one of the better ones. So it's pretty good. One of the better ones. It's up there.
Frank, do you have anything going on that you wanna shout out, or do you know of anything? Or I'm gonna throw you right under the bus right here, bud.
Yeah, no. So I don't really have. Anything at the moment to shout out,
and that's okay. That's fine. Dan put you on a spot.
That's fine.
This is a safe place.
Yes.
I'm going to end it because Dan stole my thing. But I'm going to end it with some three new tools or things around tools and brands that are coming out. So Festool just released something cool. They partnered up with, is it Printables? I think it's on Printables. And essentially they released a bunch of files, like 3D printed files that are designed to be printed in multicolor or solid color, whatever you want, to hold their tracks and some of their tools. So basically I'm going out of business because of it.
Going to say, why are you shouting?
Because it's cool. Like, and honestly, like, if more brands were to release some like accessories and things that you can 3D print for companies, I think that's really cool. Yes, it like cuts into my business, but like
it does make sense because they don't have to stock that item and they don't have to pay for shipping.
There you go. Yeah. And like, you know, they're not even selling a file or whatever. They just released a couple of things and I think it's cool. I think it's a nice thing. I kind of really want to see more brands do this. If you want to see more about it, check out Festool's website or a page, or even check out 3D DIY Dave. He did a little story about this. So I think this is really cool. And I hope more brands jump on this bandwagon. Again, it's one of those things that like, yeah, it'll make some of what I do obsolete, but I'm still going to do what I do.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, not everybody's going to know about it. But
The other thing is Laguna just came out with a new fence for, so like obviously like Harvey makes a lot of accessories and different fences for different saws. Laguna just came out with one. It looks like it might be usable on different saws as well. And it's the Driftmaster DX3, I think. So it looks like a pretty robust resawing fence. So Driftmaster.
Does that mean I can take it around a track?
So their slogan is, so definitely check that out. This is where we play that like Tokyo Drift song. I can't do it because we'll get demonetized. Oh yeah, the Tokyo Drift. We'll play it as the outro. We'll do that.
Okay. I guess. Yeah, homework.
Okay. No, don't worry about it. And the last one is, so Dan just got a brand new laser. The Bolt from Thunderbolt, get it?
Yes.
Puns. And then they went ahead and released three new versions of it.
Yeah, thanks, Thunder.
So there's a three, there's a Plus. Yes, so there's a Bolt Plus.
There's three new versions.
Bolt Pro 22 and then a Bolt Pro 33. So that's that refers to the size of the beds. So I'll give you guys a breakdown on it. And they're not paying us to say this, but I just love new tools coming out. And a lot of times with a lot of these companies, you'll get like two or three versions of like different sizes, but you don't get different
tiers of all of them. Is I don't have the pro version. I thought I was a pro.
You have the LX version, LXS. It's like a Mercedes. So there's the Bolt Plus is a 40 watt 20 by 12, which is a nice classic size, right? Then you get the Bolt Pro 22. That's a 40 watt 22 by 15. So it's a little bigger. And it's a little faster too. And then the 55 watt 32 by 20 working area. That's actually really good. That's a good size.
That's good.
The price is 15,000. Woo. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It looks like all of them have some good Z clearance as well. So I'm assuming you can do some thicker stuff.
Are they all the RF CO2? Because that's what's so cool about the one that I have.
I believe they are, yeah.
Is it because of that RF? It's got a like a super thin kerf.
I believe they are an RF,
like it's
CO2,
like a hair.
Also, this is like such a silly thing, but I really appreciate this, and I wish more lasers had it. The Bolt Pro 22 and the 32, the bottom section, the bottommost section of it above the floor, are shelves for material. I know it's silly, but like also like this is kind of cool. Like
that's pretty cool, actually.
I would put some sheets of material down there, so I appreciate.
I'd put some stuff in there. I got
holes. Would you put material in me, Dan?
Oh, I'd load it up.
Yes, I would, Greg.
so dumb. All right, should we get into the what's on our bench?
Please.
What's on my bench? Okay. So, Frank, what's in your bench this week, bud? Or this month? Whatever. What are you working on right now?
What's on my bench is everything in my shop. And it's covered with painter's plastic.
Oh, that's right.
So, I'm trying to paint the whole interior of my shop, which
you know, I've been using my shop, so it's a huge pain, and everything has to move to the center of the shop, and it's quite the undertaking. So that's what's on my bench, everything.
But imagine how good it's going to look when you're done.
It's going to look a lot better than OSB.
Yes.
Although I will say, I do like the OSB walls. It's very unique. I don't. So if I'm watching a video and I'm scrolling through IG or whatever, and I see OSB walls, I know it's really? Like right
Oh,
away.
Just like when you see a padded marshmallow room and you know it's Kamani? Yep. Yeah. I'm putting you on blast, Kamani. Marshmallow walls.
The problem with
no,
OSB,
so I don't hate the OSB.
I don't either, but the thing I hate about it, though, is like it throws the color and the white balance off of my camera.
Oh, yeah.
Makes everything like yellow.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
That was my old shop.
And like I have to color grade everything in post-production, and it's just a pain. It's a huge pain.
Yeah.
I feel that.
I totally feel that. So you're just painting over the OSB, right? I mean, you're still going to have the OSB there.
Yep.
Because I think one of the huge benefits to having that is you could put a screw basically anywhere.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, you don't need to look for studs specifically all the time.
Exactly. Have you thought about pouring epoxy over it or painting it with epoxy? I saw somebody did like the OSB epoxy floors, and they got a lot of crap for it on the internet.
Did I see that?
Yeah,
already?
it was all over, because it was one of those posts that just made everyone really mad.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see Reddit having a problem.
Yeah, I saw that too. And I'm like, what the heck?
I mean, people put cool, pennies on the ground and then epoxy them. So, which also is pretty cool. I don't know.
Yeah, I think spraying paint onto it has been enough work. I don't want to be putting epoxy on it. It would be cool.
You're spraying
though.
It all with that Wagner?
Yeah, yeah.
How do you like it?
I haven't fired it up yet, but
which one did you get?
I got the, I think it's a 170.
The Wagner 170?
Yeah.
I'm curious what it looks like now. Oh, it's one of those. Okay. Yeah. So it's like basically a standing unit where you drop the hose in a bucket and you got a spray line.
Yeah. You put a 5 gallon bucket under it.
Nice. Yeah. I bought one of those from Graco recently, thinking that I was going to do my cabinets with that. That's such overkill.
I bought a Graco that you put a hose into like a 5 gallon bucket when I had my old house and I was painting the outside. That thing was fantastic.
It lays down so much paint. I mean, dude, this sprayer that we got, I'll talk about it when we get on my bench. But yeah, so are you, by the way, so you're painting the walls. What are you doing to the floor?
I'm just covering, you know, I'm not doing anything new to the floor, but for painting, obviously I got to cover it up.
Is it just straight concrete on the floor?
Just straight concrete. Yep.
You're one of those. Okay.
I mean, like to do epoxy floors, but.
Who's that? Who's got that kind of time?
With the flakes and all that, but.
Well, I did it right as I moved in, but I also did it with a full shop.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one thing to do it just before you move in like you did, Pete. It's another thing to like have to haul everything.
Well, hang on.
Or at least one side.
Well, hold on to your thong, Dan, because I had a full shop when I did it because we were using my shop as a staging area, or at the time it was a garage. I think that's what it's called, a garage.
I'm trying to make excuses over here. Don't
worry. So I ended up, I did it as like I pushed after everything was moved into the house and it was just tools. Everything was pushed up against first it was pushed against the back wall. No, everything got pushed outside. We washed the floors, and then I did the front section, the section right by the door, and then I brought the tools in, and then I did the back part of the shop, and then I was able to spread out over the whole shop.
So everything
had to, for one day, everything had to go outside.
So I was right. Yeah. Okay, cool. That's so either way,
but still the equivalent, it was as if I had a full shop.
Frank, take note of this.
Dan was right. Get out of here. Get out of here, Dan.
Dan was correct.
Now, are you taking any, like, while you have everything kind of off the walls and whatnot, like, are you just painting or are you thinking about kind of rerunning some electrical, doing anything else?
So I'm not thinking about doing anything necessarily new. I'm thinking about changing things up, though. Like, so I took down, so I don't know if you've seen in some of my videos, I had all those 2x4 lumber racks on that back wall. So I'm not going to put those back up because that took up so much usable wall space. So I took those down.
I can relate to that.
And actually cut them up. And I'm going to burn those 2x4s.
Ooh, fire pit.
but I was thinking about doing some wall control back there, maybe doing like a logo back there and just kind of really trying to consolidate how much and really reduce the amount of lumber that I'm keeping there and maybe just move it higher to where like you can walk under it. Maybe using some more industrialized lumber racks instead of the big honking 2x4 ones.
Dope. I love it. What's the one that we have, Dan? The Hungry Dong ones? We got them like on crazy Amazon sale. They're basically just Bora racks, but like total like Chinese knockoff. It was like Hamadong. But we just call them Hungry Dong.
it's a dumb name. It really does. It's really but
we,
something
we
like
got them
that.
On one of those, like, I think I'm pretty sure it was like an Amazon F up because they were like $20. Mm-hmm. And I think we all bought like four of them or something. It was, I mean, why not? When it's that cheap, you can't say no.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. They're still holding up too. I've had mine on the wall for a couple years now. And they're attached to my wall, my concrete wall, via tap.
Oh, really?
And they're not solid concrete walls. They're cinder block walls. So, and I keep them loaded up with lumber, and they haven't fell yet. So,
sweet.
All's well.
Yeah, mine are still holding up pretty well. They're still in their boxes. They're holding up pretty good.
They're still in their boxes. One of these days, well, I'll get them up.
So, do you know what my lumber rack is made out of? So, I don't have lumber in my shop except the stuff I'm working on and plywood. All my lumber is in my shed, and it's on... adjustable shelf brackets that, like, you know, like those wire shelves, and it's this triangular thing that goes into, like, the double-slotted track. I have, like, hundreds of pounds of lumber on these things, and they are holding up rock solid. They need to be selling these things as lumber racks. Because they're adjustable by inch too, which is really, really nice. So you can change sizes. It's remarkable how much these things can hold because they are so overloaded.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Those can hold a lot. If they are the thing that
it's like the things that go in like wire shelves. Or they hold up wire shelves in closets usually.
I was thinking they were the racking like in stores, the shelves.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, these may or may not have been...
The place I used to work a long time ago when I had a job.
What's that?
I worked for a company that made those.
I may have acquired these when they were being put into the trash at an Apple-themed computer company when I worked there. They were like for... Yes,
those can hold a remarkable amount of
like
weight.
All my lumber and PD himself.
That's awesome. So.
Well, Dan, what's going on with you? What's on your Benchito? If you say Etsy orders, I'll smack you.
What do you want me to say? What exactly do you
some
think
variety?
At this point? Variety.
That's good. Good. Keep going.
Well, I did mention a couple weeks ago that I have to make my daughter a bed one of these days.
Sorry, I didn't mean to call you out on it like that.
I don't do anything other than Etsy orders. I don't know what the hell you want me to say. I'm not real happy about it, but I am happy that my bank account is happy. So,
and if the bank account is happy, there we go.
Everything
we need to
is
keep
happy,
Kayla so real happy.
I'm keeping her pretty dang happy.
Oh, hey, this is a family show. Happy. Stop it.
Not like that.
Well, then I'm very disappointed in you. You should be doing that too.
Well, she's happy. What more do you want? Pete, tell me what
that's
you're
it? You're just working on Etsy
my
orders?
My life is boring. What? I literally am not doing anything else.
All right.
I'll
keep it short and sweet, too, man. I'm working on this freaking kitchen island. It's almost done.
Man, I'm so tired of hearing
about
it.
You're doing a good job on that, Pete.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. I really needed to hear that. Thank you.
Yeah, I've been digging the content.
I just realized I've never said that.
Dan, remember how I tell you every week I'm proud of you? I just want it back once. This one's funny. The Kitchen Island is taking a remarkable amount of time. This is going to sound really stupid because this isn't even like a high-end project, but just like the level of quality I got with the paint and how much care I'm taking with like every step, it seems really silly to say.
This must be the best Kitchen Island ever.
I've really like tried to do my best with every part of it, even though it was just like a quick little but like, you know, it's like supposed to be a simpler project and kind of the trial for doing the rest of the kitchen and doing the pantry eventually. But like, I really try to do the best job. And the one thing that really, truly blew me away was, I think last week I talked about how we have joint custody now of a Graco sprayer. Got the ultimate quick shot with Keith, and we bought a 50-50.
As a matter of fact, I think they
talked about it on there.
That was their title. No, that was their show title. Joint custody sprayer. Yeah.
It's funny. I bring up Keith on this podcast as much as he brings me up on his podcast now. But so like spraying with that thing, it was the first time like I laid two coats of finish on these doors, and even after one coat, they looked flawless. Like you get that like very thick orange peel almost, like, because when you get regular orange peel, it's usually bad. It's like very fine, but when you're laying down paint with a sprayer, you get these like wavy, almost not wavy, but like it's orange peel, but just looks like bigger version of it, and it looks like a little like, oh, this is gonna look terrible. It levels off so nice, and this is the first time that I've ever applied paint to anything, and it feels so professional. Like, I've seen cabinets and doors painted, like, installed, or, like, the stuff that they sell at Home Depot, and it's painted or coated in something. It just feels like it's literally covered in, like, whatever plastic finish that, like, you see some of these fake cabinets have that's, like, glued onto it or whatever. And I never thought that I could achieve that with, like, my shop, right? And it's not just, like, the woodworking part of it. It's just, like, painting. Painting sucks. Most of us hate painting. And honestly, I can safely say now that most of us hate painting because we're using the wrong paint and a wrong tool. A lot of us are rolling them on, brushing it on or whatever, and it's just not fun. And I would be spraying for another, or sorry, I would be rolling for another week to try to get all this paint laid out on this thing and looking good without streaks. So I'm not saying you have to buy a super expensive sprayer, but a sprayer will do a good job. So aside from that, everything's sprayed. That's all done. The gun did a great job. Got all the electrical run today. The island's basically ready for assembly, so I'm going to be putting it in place tomorrow. The goal is to Emma is arriving. She's driving up with her family, with her parents from Florida, starting tomorrow morning. So I need to get this done by Saturday night, so that when they arrive at the house, the freaking island is done, and the kitchen's actually clean, and they can use it. And then starting Sunday, it's my favorite. I'm working on the ice climbing tools. So that's all getting laid out.
Oh, yay.
So that's one of those things.
You get a little taste of what I got.
I know. It'll basically just be straight up production work. And usually I bring help in at the really crappy stage, which is like the sanding and routing. This time I'm bringing in help right from the beginning, like assembly. So we're just going to do assembly
for a day.
Speaking
of help, Braden and Nick keep telling me, you know, we're here to help you if you need help. I don't like giving up control to my product because I feel like I don't like giving up control, really, because I like to be able to see the product go out before, you know, I put my stamp mm-hmm. on it or whatever. But I'm this close to taking up their offer on it because if I don't do something, I'm never going to get caught up and I'm never going to be able to like work on creative things that I want.
You know, if you pay them, then they have to do exactly the way you need. You could like pay them like a little hourly rate in the shop, and then they have to do it just like you need it.
Oh, I was hoping they would do it for free.
Well, yeah, but at some point you got to start helping them out a little bit too.
I know.
No, but I think, Dan, honestly, it's not the worst idea for you to bring in some help, even just like, you know, seasonally.
I mean, they both have CNCs now. Nick has a Onefinity as well. So just like all I'd have to do is provide him the files and the material. Just
cut, or even cut, you know, some blanks, say, hey, or
if
whatever.
Get, if you get some time, cut a bunch of these blanks out.
Or like,
and then I could put all the finishing.
Braden, mill me up a bunch of like boards of this size for the tabletops or something. Right. Like you can, you know, I think outsourcing some of that work would be very useful for you.
Something to think about in the future. Sorry, I didn't.
No, mean to that's take fine. It's something to think about, man.
You, it just it reminded
you
me.
You got to get help in a shop. I was just yelling at Pat from the Pine Barrens about how he needs to get help in a shop. And his words were, I can't afford help. And I go, I can't. You can't afford to not get help.
I understand where he's coming from, though. Like there comes a point in your business where you're doing well enough that it keeps you by yourself very busy and you're doing well financially. But if you start paying an employee, that takes a huge cut and then you're not doing nearly as good as you were. And it's a hard leap.
Well, it's not necessarily a full-time employee. Like you're not having to like give somebody a full paycheck. I think what a lot of people are forgetting is there's, I'll go off on a little tangent here. There's people jumping at the bit, is that the saying, whatever. They're hungry to learn and willing to work.
Hungry like a wolf.
Like what I said to Patrick was, I would have, like 6-7 years ago, I would have killed to work under you. That's what I told him. Like I would have killed to work in a shop as outfitted as yours with someone on your skill level, with the level of tools and lasers and CNCs that you have in your shop. And there's a kid just like me in your neighborhood somewhere. You just got to find him. Like, and just, I want everyone to think about that. Cause like we get so frightened by this whole concept of taxes and like, oh, you know, like you need to do a 1099 or whatever, W-2 or 4. I don't know how old that's.
Wait, I'm not.
But some people are worried about that because, like, you know, as soon as you bring in an employee and like insurance and whatever. But, and again, you want to do everything legally and properly and all that stuff. But there's plenty of people out there looking for work or looking to learn or looking to help out, whether it's your neighbor's kid or someone else. Like, you know, look into the insurance if somebody's in your shop or whatever. Like my umbrella policy covers that, you know, if somebody comes over and helps out. But like a lot of us started out helping out, you could say, under the table somewhere. So, you know, it's almost consider it like a way to help yourself out and somebody else out, to bring somebody in to teach them and have them try a new trade or learn a little more in that trade. And you also get a little bit of help while doing it. There's either even places where you know, like I told Pat too, like if I was in the area, I would be like, hey, I'll maintain all your tools. I'll clean up at the end of each day if you give me free rein of the shop when you guys are not in here. You know, like that would be awesome. Imagine that. Like a lot of places don't have maker spaces or a resource like that. And being able to be a resource to the place that you're going to be potentially renting time from is huge. So, and again, it's a lot to say for, like, you know, if this is in your garage, you don't want a stranger coming over your house, but explore the options. If you're in there, maybe get a little bit of help. It might be useful. Yeah.
That would be a good trade-off. I never thought about that.
Yeah. There's always a kid out there that's just wanting to learn. Yeah. Or you got a neighbor whose kid is, you know, acting out and feel like, yo, send him to work for me for a week. You know?
No.
I mean, you never know.
No.
Like, listen, back in the day, if you were bad, you like worked in like your uncle's factory or the auto body shop down the street or something just to learn. You know, that's just, I don't know. That's just how I pick things up. I worked for free in a lot of places. And then I got good enough where I could like try to do it myself. But enough of that ranting. Do we all do what's on a bench? Yeah, sorry. Frank's went a little along with that.
Yep. I'm Etsy-ian.
So why don't we get into questions?
Oh, Black Betty. Ram on him.
And let's see. First question is from...
Don't ask us why that.
I don't know why. It's just Dan singing Black Betty. But first question is from Thomas, and he is from France.
Hey, guys. I've got a question for Frank. I've seen that you made a micro jig base workbench, and I'm planning to build one for myself. Would you change anything about your workbench? do you have any recommendation? Any reason you didn't do the Workbench micro jig presents on their website? All right, bye.
Pete, would you translate for Tomas, please?
Yeah, it's like,
just in case. Well,
Tomas is asking,
because I understood
about your Workbench, and if you had to do it again, would you do it in any different way? And why didn't you do it the way that they have, kind of like a plan that they have on their site? Yeah, talk about that.
Yeah, so if I was going to do it differently, or if I was going to do it again, I can't really think of anything I'd do differently. And when we're talking about my micro jig bench, I'm assuming he's talking about my miter saw station. And so it's 21 foot long. And basically, yeah, it's just a big long workbench with a miter saw on it.
That's 6.4 meters, by the way.
6.4 meters. So I can't think of anything I would do differently. I didn't go with what MicroJig has on their website just because, you know, I wanted to get on SketchUp and design my own thing and not necessarily just go with what they had. I think anything that you do with the MicroJig match fit system is going to be great and going to help you out a lot in your wood shop. I also cut some MicroJig match fit slots into my assembly table that I built way before MicroJig match fit was a thing. And that's been super helpful on my assembly table as well. One thing I don't necessarily like about my miter saw station is how big the relief holes are, because it's hard to get like to reach up in there. I probably would have made those a little bit bigger. The only reason why I didn't is because the pre-assembled or the chest of drawers that I got given to me is what I had to work with, and so I didn't want my work surface to be too high. So that's why my torsion box is actually pretty skinny. And that's why those relief holes aren't like big enough to, like, I couldn't stick my whole arm like all the way through it. Like
Okay. Now you're just flexing about how big. Well,
I work out.
My forearm wouldn't go all the way in there. But
by the way, too, anyone confused about what he's talking about, he has like the Ron Polk style workbench miter station design. So it's got those like oval pill shaped holes in it.
Yeah, yeah.
But these, no matter how big they are, it's still not big enough for his arm because he's so buff. So, you know, it's a weird flex.
Also, you wouldn't do exactly what MicroJig has on their website, because you're not Frank copies it. Frank
does. He does do it. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You wouldn't download a workbench.
Right.
That's an old reference. So dumb. Yeah, show title.
Yeah.
All right, next question is from Sarah.
Hey, everyone. It's Sarah with Rosie's Woodshop. I had a question for Frank. I saw that your daughter is involved in some of your videos and helping you out with stuff, and I think that's so awesome. I'm a female woodworker, and I kind of wish I was doing this when I was growing up. So what's that experience like, having her in the shop? How does she feel? Does she like want to be doing this stuff when she's older? Yeah, have a great night. Bye, guys.
Well, it's so awesome. Actually, I have three daughters, and my youngest daughter, she's the comedian that you always see.
Yeah, she's the little spitfire, from what I gather.
She's the little comedian. And then my middle daughter, she likes to come out and like help spread glue and stuff like that. My older daughter does as well. And my older daughter is the one where, I don't know if you've seen the video where I'm like, the firstborn daughter is always the female version of her father, and like, I did a funny video where she's doing a butt smack on me, like pow, pow, pow. And then I do a little slow-mo zoom in on her face, like on the last hard smack that she does on my butt. But It's funny. Like, I love being a girl dad, and you know, they all like to be in my videos. The only one that has actually said that she wants to be a woodworker is my oldest daughter.
Oh,
Finley. She's super smart. Like, even when she was really quite a bit younger, like, they had a handle on their kitchenette, like toy kitchen, like break off on one of the cabinets. She came out and got some wire and like ran it through the two holes and like twisted it together on the back and fixed it herself before. And nobody ever taught her how to do that.
You taught her curiosity. That's what's important. Yeah. She wanted to know how to fix it.
And she's just got natural ingenuity. Yeah.
I love that.
And she's the one that says she wants to be a woodworker.
That's great.
Fiona, my youngest, she definitely wants to be a comedian, I think.
Oh, geez.
What about your son? Does your son get out there often?
Yeah, he gets out. He gets out with me. We do a lot of like wood cutting and stuff together, things like that. But he's not huge into the woodworking stuff, but he's definitely big into the video production side of things.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I think he'll probably work for me someday, as an editor. And he actually has like a producer type mind. Like, you should see some of the short films that he comes up with. They're like the camera angles that he sets up and like how he edits them. It's like, dude,
he's
super good at it.
If he gets real good, send him down to Omaha. I could use all the help. Yeah.
See, I love that because you're getting your kids involved. Like, they see what you're doing. It's not something where like dad has a hobby, but don't like leave dad alone. He's just in his garage tinkering. Like, you know, like it's, you're bringing the kids in, you're getting them involved. It's going to sound really mean, but like, boring parents make boring kids. Yep. And boring kids make boring adults.
Ow.
Like, I'll take this back to like college and like dating. And I was meeting some of these girls and guys that were just like, you just don't have a one entertaining bone in your body. You're not into anything. You're not creative. Your hobbies are Netflix and hanging out. Like, the people that, if you're getting your kids involved in something to the point where they're going to be the weird ones, the ones that like have hobbies and are into interesting things and have quirks, and they won't just ask like why, they'll ask like, well, what, how, or like, how can I do this? Or why is it like that? Or, you know, they'll really get involved and try to figure out how things work. And that makes such interesting people and such interesting grownups. And that gets other people involved in it because everyone needs a hobby. And yeah, not enough people have hobbies. Not enough adults have hobbies. And I unfortunately think it's because they didn't have parents like you growing up. You know, that got them involved, they got them entertained. And even if they don't lift a tool after the age of 15 ever in their life, at least they were exposed to it and they're intrigued in something. And like, your son could, maybe he won't do anything with making of any kind, but he'll be a producer. He'll do videography.
But right. It leads to other things.
It shows them interest because you're doing that too. You're editing, you're doing voiceovers and all that stuff. You're exposing them to cool stuff, man. And that's amazing. And I think there's no better thing to teach your kids is that, like, hey, you can do whatever you want.
For sure. And I think they're all out there and creative in their own way.
That's awesome. There's a lesson for you guys. Be like Frank and do it.
Do it.
Just do it.
And if you,
speaking of doing it,
oh, go ahead.
No, I was like, are we doing it? Are we done doing it? How's
one could say we had done it.
We had done it with Frank.
We did do it. that's for the top tier of Patreon. But Frank, thank you so much for joining us, man. We've been talking about having you on for probably 2 years, like since last year's Workbench Con. I'm glad you finally joined us. We had a good time and finally got to chat like we were supposed to at Workbench Con.
For sure.
But dude, thank you so much. Where can everyone find you? What's the best places to check you out?
So I'm on all the bigger platforms, YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. On Instagram, I'm at The Real Frank Does It. Everywhere else, it's Frank Does It. And then
because there's one fake Frank on there,
and that's
and he's not even doing it.
He's not. He doesn't follow anybody. He doesn't have any followers.
He doesn't.
He had boring parents. That's what happened.
Active since like 2018. So
yeah, boring parents. Well, that's 100%.
I think he just wanted to shaft me.
He's just Frank doesn't do jack,
right?
All right. Dan, can you do it?
I wanted to thank Frank as well. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you. It's been a joy. If you want to help us out with this podcast, you can do a number of things. Number one, you could just share the show. Share it with everybody you know. Share it with your friends and your family, your coworkers, the people you meet down the street. As you're walking your dog and your dogs start fighting each other and you're like, hey, get your dog on my dog. And then be like, oh, by the way, have you heard this podcast? You should go listen to it.
Why, really? All right. All right. Go on.
or put it in your social media somewhere, your stories, whatever, what have you. Make a Craigslist ad. That's a thing people don't do anymore. That'd be cool. Anyway, share the show however you can. That's always helpful. If you want to help us out financially and get a little something back in return, you can go over to patreon.com/anotherwoodshoppodcast and join us over there. Become one of the Met Army. I think.
And I'm laughing at the Craigslist ad. I don't know why. It's just crappy ad, like... Fun podcast. I mean, it's
It's free to put a Craigslist ad out there, so I'm not like asking for a lot. It's like
when we had set up the Yelp page.
That's still a thing, yo.
I'm laughing at the dog on dog crime.
Dog on dog crime.
You can write us reviews on any of the platforms, Apple. Like Pete brought up, we do have a Yelp page. I think we're a radio station in Omaha, Nebraska.
Yep. Any one of the places where we got 500,000 downloads, no big deal.
Yeah, we brought that up.
We
last
did,
week.
But I'd like to flex.
Yeah, half a mil.
Nice.
Take that, Craft Will Never Die. Sorry, too soon.
Frank, thanks again for joining us, man. You're one of my favorite people in the whole
world.
Thanks,
buddy.
I think that's it.
That might be it, Dan.
I think I'm getting pretty good at this outro stuff.
That does it.
Love you
long time. Bye bye.
Thanks, guys. You guys are awesome.
Man. Take care.
Yeah, man.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.